Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Katie, MPs were voting quite late last night, but they were woken at 5:30 this morning by a letter from David Davis. What could be better?
Exactly. It's how everyone wants to wake up in the morning. And this was a letter from David Davis trying to prevent or stave off a rebellion tonight on Dominic Grebe's amendment, which is calling for a meaningful vote. And what David Davis is trying to tell colleagues is stick with us and you will get a meaningful vote. You don't need to go about it in this manner. Trust us. It's yet to see how successful this would be. And I think it comes over a bit of what you define as a meaningful vote. So no one is quite sure when exactly they will get to vote because they don't know when they get this deal. And does Dominic Grebe want to be in a point when is his meaningful vote one which allows Parliament to send back the negotiating team to change the deal?
James, how defiant do the rebels seem to be this morning in the run-up to this vote?
So Dominic Grebe doesn't seem like he intends to be bought off. The question is, how cohesive is that group? So I think you're going to see the government trying to give in on as many things as possible because it really doesn't want to concede this meaningful vote, because I think it fears that if a meaningful vote means that Parliament could send the UK negotiators back to the table, I think one of the fears in government is that would incentivise almost the EU to offer you a bad deal in the hope that Parliament would turn around and say, actually, staying in the EEA would be a lot simpler than this. And that is obviously, you know, the UK staying in the EEA would actually be a great option for the EU because we'd have to carry on following all the rules, there'd be no disruption, and we wouldn't have a say.
And why was the letter sent at 5:30? It is an odd time, even for a last-minute attempt to compromise.
I think all things sent at 5:30 in the morning, the question is, have you been up all night or just woken up? I think we should probably...
Yeah.
Also, draw a veil over the question of which is more likely in this particular instance.
There have long been rumours that David Davis might not work a full 5-day week. That's what his former advisers have suggested. So perhaps instead what he does is what's really, really long days on the days he does deem worthy of working.
That's very charitable of you, Katie. Now, David Davis has been in trouble this week for unintentional comments, and this week, Anne-Marie Morris has also had the whip restored to her after some unintentional racism, James.
Anne-Marie Morris had the whip suspended from her for talking about the M-word in the woodpile at a think tank event a few months back. I find it hard to credit. She kind of was surprised that it was, she kind of said it was kind of unintentional. I don't quite see how it's unintentional. It's, you know, I think if you're a politician, you ever hear yourself uttering the N-word, you probably are not in the right place. I mean, the Tories' decision to give her the whip back is a mistake because it, A, makes them look like they are, they're kind of, you know, she's only been suspended for a couple of months, like 6 months or something like that. And I mean, that's not appropriate to the gravity of the offence. And I mean, the other thing is this, is the Tories are back to where they were pre-Cameron with ethnic minority voters. And obviously ethnic minority voters care about lots of things, but this kind of slight inference given off by this is that the Tories are kind of relaxed about this kind of language, and that is not a good look for any political party, especially not one that desperately needs to do a better job of wooing ethnic minority voters.
It's particularly odd, Katie, isn't it, given previous comments and policies that Theresa May has made?
Yeah, I think it's odd for many reasons, and it's also odd if you just look back a few weeks when the Tories were going on the attack very heavily on Labour after Emma Dent Coed made comments about, you know, a ghetto boy accusing Labour of, you know, identity politics and racism in some ways of their attitudes. So you would think if they are really going to go for Labour on this, they would want to have a lot of, you know, not just a bit of clear water, you know, the cold tide of it to show like that they are on different ground, and this just seems to undo it and mean their attacks don't mean much.
And finally, Spectator readers are going to be up at 5:30 a.m. tomorrow reading the Christmas issue, which comes out. James, you've done an interview with Ruth Davidson in that.
Yes, Fraser and I went up to Edinburgh to see her, and what I was struck by was how she basically said, look, after 2021, we can have conversations about what I'm going to do next. So after the next Scottish Parliament elections. And I thought what was interesting was, it's the most serious I've seen her about coming to Westminster. She, A, was explicit that she'd only stand for a Scottish seat. And she also made this argument that if devolution's going to work, people are going to have to be able to move between for two chambers. And I thought you can almost hear the justifications for her decision, that she's not abandoning Scotland by standing for Westminster. This is the way this devolution settlement should work, is that people should jump between the two parliaments. I mean, one thing she said to us was she cited Alex Salmond as a kind of example of this. You know, he'd gone from Westminster to Holyrood and back again. And that, you know, she basically was arguing that this would be good for the UK and good for Scotland if people kind of bounce between these chambers.
Katie, Ruth Davidson is very well loved by the London media, but how well tested has she been as a politician? She's very good at doing photo calls, she's appearing on tanks and various other things. But in terms of her performance as Scottish Conservative leader, as someone who would be good at the dispatch box, what do we know about her in that sense?
Well, obviously now the Scottish Conservatives are the official opposition in Scottish Parliament, and that has put her in a role where she is challenged a lot more, because it's no longer kind of less more on the sidelines. But I think, at least in England, what a lot of people do is they see her as someone who's very optimistic and positive sounding, and they kind of just project other qualities that they might not have seen yet, presuming she'll be brilliant at everything. Whereas if you speak to, you know, some people who in the Tory party they kind of have a bit more caution to it. They do say, you can't really say someone's going to be a great Conservative leader, let alone Prime Minister, until they have had a ministerial role in Westminster and you've seen how they fare at the dispatch box, because it is different.
Oh, look, I think Katie is right that the challenge for her is that she's never been a minister, because the Tories have never been in government in Scotland. She's never done that. She is good at the dispatch box, though. I think, we gave a parliamentarian of the year this year, because at FMQs, she does do a pretty decent job. She's pretty robust up against Nicola Sturgeon. I think the bigger challenge is the scenario which ends up with her as Prime Minister, I think, requires Theresa May to carry on until 2021. And then it requires the Tory party to take a massive leap of faith and basically be prepared to make someone their leader who isn't yet an MP, so who's standing for one of those relatively safe Tory seats in the borders of Scotland. And basically, she'd have to win her seat and then she would become Prime Minister. This is a massive stretch. But I think the Tory party might just go for it, because one of the things that comes out in this interview is just how keen she is to go toe-to-toe with Jeremy Corbyn, how convinced she is that she can burst his bubble. While as you see lots of other Tories who kind of say, oh my God, woe is us, how do we stop momentum? It's not possible. She's just like, I've done this before. You know, this is just like pricking Nicola Sturgeon's bubble. Let me come down here and do it. So, you know, she says about Jeremy Corbyn, you know, he's eminently beatable. She radiates a confidence, but you won't find many members of the cabinet radiating even in private.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Katie. And a reminder that we have a special Christmas offer for our podcast listeners. A year's subscription to The Spectator for £99. It is normally £135. And we'll throw in a bottle of Berry Brothers champagne. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Christmas podcast offer. Thanks for listening.